the reason that I decided to build in the backyard, I only had one or two units at the time when I decided to do that. And honestly, out of all of the units that I had, it was the one that performed the best by far. Like, everybody who's on my block, they've owned their house for 30 plus years. Mm. And it's amazing, but all they're doing with these lots is playing what I call lawn wars, rather than actually leveraging this space, because initially, honestly, that was the idea for this whole platform. Because there are some people who it's like the ROI might not be monetary. It might just be, I have this, and now my mom is able to be here, and she's helping with my kids, whatever it is. But if it is monetary, and you say, okay, I want to rent this out, you absolutely can dig a really good hole into whatever you spent within the first year.
What's going on, millionaires? It's your guy, Kai Speaks, back for another episode of the Million Dollar Mind Podcast. Here with my co-host, Heavy House Jazz. How you feeling, Jazz?
You know, I'm feeling great.
How you feel about this episode that we about to have today?
I'm excited. I'm very excited to have Miss Precious on. I'm very excited to hear what she's been doing and just sharing it. Not only with our guests, but I think that the world is going to tap into this one even more.
They need to.
Oh, yeah.
They need to. And this is going to be an episode that I'm thinking this is going to be big for so many people, but more specifically, like, our homeowners, our aspiring homeowners, those who are find themselves in these sticky situations that they like, damn, how did I get myself into this? Yep. All I wanted to do was turn my house into an investment, or I'm trying to get some cash flow. I'm trying to house hack. I'm trying to do all the things. Mm-hmm. And I get hit with these roadblocks. And the guest that we have in the building today, I feel like she brought the sauce and the cherry on top that's not only going to help you get out of the situation, but better understand how to move forward. But without further ado, I want to introduce this intelligent young woman we have in the building, Miss Precious. She's a beast in the real estate space, a beast in the tech space, and a beast in putting it all together. Precious, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got started in the space.
Yes. Well, number one, thank y'all for having me. Absolutely. I'm so excited for this conversation. About me, I have been here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm based in Atlanta. I've been in Atlanta, Georgia for the last 6 years. I relocated here after I finished my master's at Indiana University. Originally from Chicago, went to IU, studied business and tech, and always knew like that entrepreneur was in me, like always doing little side hustles and all of that. But it wasn't until I would say like the pandemic and everybody started to really reevaluate like their values. How am I spending my time? What do I really want to do? What's bringing me joy? That I was like, okay, it's now officially time for me to step away from my corporate job and to bet all on myself. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. So I started my career when I got here in management consulting. I was doing consulting for large, like Fortune 500 companies. The big names that you can think of is likely who we had worked with. I was in the areas of like AI, so artificial intelligence, as well as marketing. And it was amazing. Like, I don't know if anybody, like if you're not familiar with consulting, it's basically like we go into other businesses and help them solve their problems in the areas of strategy, tech, whatever you want to call it. But the really good piece about that is like you get to travel. If you got it good, you get to travel.
Yeah.
And you can build those points up. You get the hotels, the flights, like, and it was an amazing career straight out of college. Like, and I had no idea what consulting was. Probably 4 or 5 years like before I did that, I had no idea what it was because I'm first gen everything. So everything that I was doing is just like, okay, we figuring it out. After I was looking at kind of the trajectory of, you know, you can climb that corporate ladder, and I'm seeing the folks who were partners, were managing directors, and I'm seeing them in the office late. And it's like, you say you married, you got a family, like, where are you spending that time? Because I don't want work to be 100% of my life.
Right.
And that was the realization that I came to right around, I would say, like 2020, things started to hit the fan. I was still managing my side hustles, and I had started the build for this tiny house in my backyard because I had purchased the property and started to get into real estate on the side. And when all of that happened and the stress from the job on top of the stress from my side hustles, on top of the stress from trying to, in the middle of a pandemic, work with city officials in these offices, the zoning office, the building permits office, to get this build happening in my backyard, I realized, okay, I got to let something go.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the easiest thing was that job.
But I don't want to get rid of my side hustle. I don't want to get rid of nothing I own.
No, and that was the thing, because at the time when I officially said, okay, I'm going to walk away from it, like I was teetering on it for a while, like a few years before that. And I had got to the point where I was making more money on the side than I was in my corporate job. And I'm like, well, if anything gonna go,
you understand
exactly. Yes. It's gonna be y'all. So at that point, that's what kind of began to dub me. Like when I bought that first property on the south side, then I put the ADU in the back. That's what kind of dubbed me as like this real estate entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was already in vacation rentals as well, short term rentals. And I started basically scaling a portfolio after I quit that job. I'm like, okay, let's go all in, let's scale. Ended up getting to 9 units here within the city of Atlanta.
Nice.
So 5 of those were corporate leases, the others were houses, and then there was also like 1 apartment as well. And it was good, I mean, until it wasn't. Like, you get to a point where it's just like, okay,
go ahead, say that.
What's the point of, like, again, the money was great, but at what cost?
Listen to her.
That was...
So that you felt yourself working even harder than you was working back at the job.
Exactly, because I remember the spinoff of me wanting to quit that job was like, okay, I think y'all are burning me out. And then I got to a point where I'm like, I had quit that job. I'm now all in on myself, and I'm doing all of this, and I'm building this short-term rental portfolio. And then I look up again, and, oh, I'm burnt out. And I'm like, damn, it wasn't the job.
I'm doing it to myself.
It was me the whole time.
That's where I'm at. I get it.
Wow.
So that was a crazy realization for me at that point, that I'm like, okay, if I want something different, I got to do something different. And this is not it, because again, I told y'all I'm first generation everything. So my relationship with money is interesting. It's super interesting, because I remember, like, again, I'm the first one to go to college, get my master's, get this big corporate job. Like, when I got that consulting job, I was making more than a lot of my family members.
Yeah.
And there was this fear I always had of, like, going back broke. So I wouldn't even be spending money on my, like, I would be skimping myself.
Uh-huh.
And my friends would have to remind me.
Yeah,
like, that's interesting. Usually it's the opposite.
Was she sent by God today?
Okay, she had to be. Everything is all aligned. It's all connected for sure.
So, we'll be having wine after this, Quint.
Absolutely. So when that happened, and I'm like, okay, it's me burning myself out. That's when I'm like, okay, we gotta switch something up. And I realized that I was building and building and building. And the way that I put it, I'm like, I feel like I'm becoming a glorified property manager. Like, yes, I got a team. Yes, you know they doing, but it's like, it's me that I'm always worrying. If they call it, I got to pick up at night, like all of these things. And I'm like, that's not what I want. And that like flung me into a season where I'm figuring out like, okay, what does success mean to me? Because initially it was like success, it was always like my parents' good grades, you get a good job, you got some stability, you able to pay your bills, and cool. And then at one point when I got to business school, it's like, okay, success to me is like, I want to hit a million before 30. Again, why and at what cost were the questions that I started to ask myself. And I started to realize that, you know, that year that I had decided to walk away from Airbnb and all of the stuff, all of the things, I had made the most money I had ever made in my entire life.
When you walked away from it, or you made the decision after?
I made the decision after making all of that money.
Gotcha,
and
gotcha.
Then feeling and realizing like, damn, this, like, literally on the outside in terms of career and financially, it all looked amazing.
Yeah,
but the feeling on the inside
was not there.
It did not align. And that's when I realized, I'm like, I don't think for me personally, it's not money I'm chasing anymore. I'm good.
You're chasing the freedom.
Exactly.
And the wellness.
And that's when I started to, because I've always been super big on goal setting, right? And like, okay, like let's do the 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 years, where you want to be. I started to shift from goal setting to lifestyle design. How do I want to design my life? How do I want my days to look 5 years from now? What, not what I want to accomplish by in the next 5 years, but how do I want my days to look? And if I'm saying that I want to be able to wake up on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m., get a cup of tea, walk my dog, go outside, do some yelps, if I'm saying that that is what I want it to look like, are my actions and what I'm currently doing aligning with that goal? Not necessarily saying, okay, well, I need to get to like 2 million by this time in order to do that, because you get there and it's always going to be a moving target. And that's what I started to realize. Like, it was always a moving target. I'm like, okay, I want to get to 100K. Okay, I want to get to 500,000. And then you get in there and you're proving all of this stuff to yourself. And it's just like, I started to realize, and I've said this has been like a theme of the conversations with my friends lately, is me realizing that for a lot of my life, I tended to choose hard. I tended to choose the hard route. I tended to choose the really, really hard goals. When it's like, if things are easy, just let them be easy. And if easy as like, hey, get you some digital products, build you a tech company, and that's going to allow you the freedom in order to do that. What do I need to go ahead and say, okay, I want to be a billionaire? Does that truly align with what I want? No, it's just what everybody has told me is going to get there. And then you talk to the billionaires and millionaires, and it's like, y'all not even happy for real.
Yeah.
So and I want happiness. Mm-hmm. I don't want something that looks good. I want something that feels good to me. So that was just a huge piece of me just making that transition and kind of why people have seen me pivot from here to here to here. Because once I realize that something isn't working for me in my spirit and where I want to go, okay, cool, let's pivot. How can we make this work? It was a great experience. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But let's move on to what's next. So after that, I had stepped away from short-term rentals, and honestly, there was a lot of conviction around that because I'm like, you know, there are people who, again, like, we can go to any intersection in Atlanta and see some unhoused people. Mm-hmm. We can go anywhere, and then honestly, in most major cities these days. And I'm like, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
To take up, like, because I started getting messages mm-hmm. from people. Like, mm-hmm. who am I to take up this space that is like, okay, this single parent, she just trying to get to her job that's probably a couple blocks away from wherever the apartment is, let's say, that I have, but I'm now taking up this space. And even though I'm not, like, a big corporate landlord with thousands of units, I can still make a difference by mm-hmm. giving these units that I have back to people who actually need them. Because my motto when I was in Airbnb was, well, I'm not renting to any locals, and I'm mm-hmm. I'm renting to the highest bidder, whoever yep. paying the highest payment, correct. The highest price. And it got to a point where it's like, why? Why? To pad my own pocket. So that's when the shift for me, I started doing social impact consulting.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a couple contract jobs, and I realized, like, okay, I really like, you know, working toward a greater mission,
mm-hmm.
a greater purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to help make some money and do good things, but for a good cause and not just to, like, pad our bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what led me into what I'm doing now, basically.
Yeah.
That's what led me into what I'm doing now. It's like, okay, this is a major issue. I had created the docuseries around my build process for that accessory dwelling mm-hmm. unit in my backyard, and flooded. I started to get flooded with questions and comments, and like, I had no idea, or can you show me, or this is so cool, or, you know, I've been wanting to move my aging in-laws in.
Right. You don't want to move them in your house. You want to build a whole separate.
Exactly.
Got you.
Exactly. And when I saw that, or when I saw just the volume of inquiries that we were getting, and how popular just the topic was becoming, I'm like, okay, there's a way for me to solve this issue, or at least solve a piece of it, right?
And so how did you solve that? How are you solving that issue? Talk to us about mm-hmm. that software or this tech company that you and your business partner have started.
Yeah, absolutely. So the company is called GatherADU.com, mm-hmm. And it's specifically for homeowners who are looking to build what's called accessory dwelling units. Your average person is likely going to know them as a backyard tiny house. That's what they call them. Mm-hmm. But the official term for it is ADU. And how we're doing that, so our software allows homeowners who basically have that question of, can I do this? Because that's the main question. You might see it on YouTube. Everybody's seeing it everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
You see the ads. You see the Amazon sheds. But most people,
approved in California.
Exactly. All over the state. All over the state. That's no question. They've had it on lock this
I
whole
know.
Time. They've been had it on lock.
Yeah, we've approved it.
I'm glad.
Approved it a long time ago.
Exactly. I'm glad it's finally cascading across. But our software answered that question for your average homeowner who doesn't know, okay, is this something that I can do? So you're able to go on our website, search your address, and when you search your address, it is then going to check your zoning and your permitting data to determine whether or not something like this is possible. And when I say accessory dwelling unit, it doesn't have to be like your backyard tiny house. It could be you want to convert your garage into a separate apartment. You want to like add some space on top of the garage or something. All of those are considered accessory dwelling units. So it basically just helps those homeowners to, number one, answer that question. If you can, then our software, we have a back-end software where it helps you to plan and actually manage that build. Because typically it's over the course of about 6 to 12 months. You're working with a number of stakeholders in order to make it happen. And then honestly, there are just a bunch of factors, especially up front. We say that we like to help with what's called pre-construction planning.
Mm-hmm.
Homeowners love to choose, like, okay, this is the color I want. This is how I want it to look. But there's so much.
You got to do before you even get
exactly
there.
Before you even get there. And we're helping with everything that happens before you get there. So actually designing the structure, mm-hmm. getting any type of land surveys, architectural mm-hmm. plans, mm-hmm. site plans, working with the city to submit a permit.
And is it like a checklist or a timeline that they're looking at?
It's a checklist with a whole journey where it's kind of like an interactive. So you can go in and where you are within that checklist, you're able to actually complete that step so that you can like know where you are within that process as well.
Right. Know what you have to attack. Right?
Exactly.
In line. Because that's so you're the not question. Out of line. That's one of the biggest things about building, right? And that me just as a developer mm-hmm. always. People don't finish because they don't know the process.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They don't know the next
you
step.
Can
they don't
just
know
the process and actually trade it out. I mean, you can get mm-hmm. it done, but if this is a real big help to people, this is like, hey, you got a lot more finishers and a lot less houses that are just out there not being constructed appropriately or in the right time.
Exactly. And I think the realization for me, it was when I came, because I told you I'm from Chicago, and Chicago is not like I came to the South. And even when I bought my first property, I'm like, there's a lot of space. And why do we have so much space in his backyard?
You was complaining?
I was complaining. It's just like, why? It's so different because I'm like, it was beautiful because I love being outside. But I'm just like, what is all of this space? I'm like, I can fit another one of my house back
in my backyard for sure.
In my backyard. And I'm like, all we're doing at this point, because I live on a lot, not in a lot, in a neighborhood where it's historic, right? And I say historic in terms of these are older folks. Like everybody who's on my block, they've owned their house for 30 plus years. Mm. Older, like black folks.
I love this.
And it's amazing, but all they're doing with these lots is playing what I call lawn wars. It's like they get out there, it's time to mow the lawn, and if one person sees mowing the lawn, you best believe they out and they about to get theirs together too. And it's like, that's all we're doing rather than actually leveraging this space. Because initially, honestly, that was the idea for this whole platform. It was like, how can we get these aging seniors who have all of this space that they don't need and they cannot manage mm-hmm. to, you know, figure out how to better utilize. Exactly. Like downsize, and then we can utilize their space.
But you don't have to lose the property.
Exactly.
Like the crisis that we've seen in Black history over time.
Yes.
And so I love this, Precious, that you're attacking something that has been here with us for a long time, mm-hmm. and then also something that's very current and just across the board. It doesn't matter whether you're Black, white, Asian, there is no color on, hey, it can be a hard time.
Yes.
How do I tap into my equity? How do I tap into helping my parents or my college student, and I still want my life back?
Yes.
Yes, so.
100%. And it was and there were so many factors that kind of played into it, right? Like this aging seniors piece, but then also like we talked about the multi-unit piece, right? Like everybody wants to buy a multi-unit, and I remember that was my goal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when I initially purchased my first property, I'm like, well, there's a huge backyard. I'm going to do something with it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was yet, but I'm like, if I can't get this multi-unit, I'm going to get something where it's like, I know that I can expand on it.
Got it.
And it was that piece. And then on top of the fact that like with the pandemic and everything happening, we're getting further and further into a point where more people are wanting to get back to like group economics and living in community, and people are doing these family homesteads and all of that. So it's like, how can we do that with what we already have? And that was the idea.
So because you mentioned equity and you mentioned stakeholders inside the software, are you partnering or are you pairing the homeowners with potential investors? Is that kind of what that means? Or talk to us a little bit about what mm-hmm. that means, stakeholders.
So we connect them with financing, but I wouldn't necessarily say potential investors, because it's about maybe like a 60-40 split in terms of the homeowners that reach out to us that are, you might be like a pure real estate investor, 40% of them. Pure real estate investor saying, hey, I have these houses, I want to add more to it, and then maybe this is a unit that I want to rent mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. The other 60% are your average homeowners, like we were talking about, maybe older folks who they've been sitting on their home, they have some equity, and they're wanting to build in the back to move their in-laws in, to move their adult children in, and things like that. So for the investors, the real estate investors, they got the capital already.
Yeah.
Like they come with it. We find that we have to work more closely with your average homeowner in terms of identifying financing, which honestly isn't becoming it isn't as big of a hurdle as it was, let's say, like 2 years ago, because now the organizations like Fannie and Freddie, they now have products mm-hmm. and loan products that
products
exactly
right
specifically for accessory mm-hmm. dwelling units. If you're wanting to do something like that, and they're just structuring it as like, you know, a renovation loan or a reconstruction mm-hmm. loan.
Would it not be also better just to kind of tap into the equity of the home?
Exactly.
Especially if they've been there for 30 years,
exactly.
They got some equity.
Exactly. You
got
to be
like,
careful.
Home equity investing right now, like think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Really read into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of a big new thing, but people don't understand they could be taking equity and more percentage of the money up front.
Exactly.
But we'll get into that in a different
way. Yeah. I mean, what
financing.
I do want to paint that picture though for the audience. Like, mm-hmm. what are the fears or what are the dangers that you do have to worry about on these different options that they have to be able to make that possible? If it's mm-hmm. not the home equity or if it's the financing product that we're talking about, mm-hmm. what are the dangers and red flags that they should look for?
So the best, honestly, one of the best way, and you know, it isn't the best way, I will say, is tapping into your home equity. That's going to provide you with, I guess, like the quickest, the most seamless process, because what I find is some of these homeowners as well, what they're doing is they're going to banks and trying to get a loan, mm-hmm. which I'd much rather you just tap into your equity. If
yeah,
you
get a home equity line.
Exactly.
You're only using it on what you borrowed.
Mm-hmm.
It's simple. I agree.
Exactly. Or, and then when you're getting this separate loan, again, it comes with this separate interest rate that you're also going to have to then buy into and pay into. And if you are somebody who you have equity in your house, it's likely that you have a lower interest rate than what they're offering right now.
Yep.
So you're about to be spending even more money.
And if you don't have a mortgage at all, just do a freaking refinance, something. I mean, not like that, but don't pay the interest on it.
Exactly.
You have a low mortgage, but I mean, hopefully somebody's moving in and you're building something for a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And the piece that we're also doing as well, because there are folks who they reach out and it's like, maybe they are wanting to do this for a business, but this is one of their first ventures or something. Mm-hmm. Getting them connected and even more familiar with CDFI, so community development financial institutions, getting them connected with those types of institutions, because unlike a bank, they are actually going to look at, okay, how are you adding value to that community, mm-hmm. and likely give you a better interest rate or even a better just package overall than you would get from your average, I don't know, let's say Chase or another lender.
Mm-hmm.
What do those look like?
What?
Community development financial institutions, like, as opposed mm-hmm. to like some big box bank like Chase. Mm-hmm.
They're really just smaller. They focus on they're area specific, like neighborhood specific, meaning mm-hmm. that if you're in, let's say, like Southeast Atlanta, mm-hmm. and you're saying that this is what I want to do in Southeast Atlanta, and you know that Southeast Atlanta is facing an issue in terms of availability of affordable units in mm-hmm. the area, they are then going to take that into account mm-hmm. when they are lending to you, so that they're not just looking at it like, okay, well, you're a first-time lender, it's so much risk. It's like, no, you're actually adding value, so they're going to give you likely a better interest rate, and then on top of that, they're going to give you resources in terms of people to work with to really make it happen. They'll actually support you through it versus mm. just giving the money to you.
Like, right. Yeah, like contractors sure and stuff
problem.
Like that.
Exactly.
Like project.
Exactly.
That was a gem right there for a lot mm-hmm. of people. A lot of people have never heard of that. And I can honestly tell you.
Are these like credit unions?
Mm-hmm. It's not a credit union, but it's similar to the setup. Similar
gotcha.
To the setup in terms of like a credit union, you know, many times it is specific to an area or it's smaller. Exactly. CDFIs
gotcha.
Are similar to that.
So I want to take a dive back into your journey of building your tiny home in your backyard. Did mm-hmm. this come before or at, like where were you at the point of your journey of did you already have these Airbnbs and these mm-hmm. units and you were kind of burnt out? So you was like, let me take a step back and let me build the tiny home.
Mm-hmm.
Where were you that made you want to say, you know what, let's build this in the backyard and explore this journey?
So the reason that I decided to build in the backyard, I only had one or two units at the time when I decided to do that. But mm-hmm. I decided that because initially I wasn't going to rent it out. I was going to live in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a way for me to more safely rent out the larger house, the primary home that the lot sits on. And then I was downsizing in the back. And then on top of that, eventually in my head, I was like, I'm going to get back to traveling for work and all of that.
Yes.
It's the perfect little setup.
Yeah.
But
God said more.
Exactly. God said more. God said more. And at that point, like the moment that I finished it up, especially with all of the issues that ended up happening. You can watch it all in the docuseries on YouTube. But after that is when I had decided that, okay, no, we're going to give it a shot at just renting this out. And honestly, out of all of the units that I had, it was the one that performed the best by far.
The tiny home?
Yes.
Wow. What about it do you feel like made it perform so well?
I mean, number one, it's a trending search topic for so
it's
many
more
people right
people.
Now.
I would say that. I mean, it's the average person. They need to know this. Short-term rental, everybody can't do it. They can't even fix their mind around it. But an ADU, I have a house.
Mm-hmm.
I can build that. My husband can make a cabinet. Come on.
Yes. Yes.
But what made it so successful, though?
So popular. Honest, again, I really think it's because you guys have seen it. Everybody has seen it over the last few years. We've seen so many people on YouTube, on these shows, talking about how they're converting this structure into a tiny house. Everybody's talking about tiny spaces and living more of a minimalist lifestyle right now.
Right.
I really think that that's what did it. And then on top of that, just the novelty of like, it's a small cabin in the backyard. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so cute.
It's like a man cave.
And so people just want to experience
that. Exactly. Gotcha. It's similar to, like, there's a company called Getaway Cabins.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yes. And they, oh my goodness, fantastic business model.
I don't want to talk about it because it's like, man, okay.
They have a fantastic business model. I do have to give it to them. I've stayed in one myself and I'm like, oh, this is it. And they just take literally like a plot of land, yes, just out in the outskirts, and they just put a bunch of little small, they convert shipping containers, small, yep, shipping containers,
wow,
and just put them on there and rent them out for the weekend, and it does amazing. Mm-hmm. They're literally at least $100 to $200 a night.
Wow.
For each of them. And that was the similarity, right? It's like so many people are into these, like, I don't know, just alternative ways of living now that it just did well. And I will tell you, I had the gamut of people staying there from like construction workers, like tall men, yeah, that were like, hey, I'm gonna check it out,
yeah,
to small families, to couples. Like, it did really well. It did. And then that's again, dope, because it's like, it's cute, it's a tiny house, it's a unique experience that you're likely just not gonna get at another Airbnb. It allowed me to upcharge, mm-hmm, a bit as well.
Got
like
it.
It's like you can be in the backyard. I got a little fire pit back there. Mm-hmm. If you want to toast some
it's
s'mores.
A totally different, it's like being able to have the experience, mm-hmm, without having to like drive super far and do, yes, certain things, and even just that. I love it. Now, I want to ask you something because you've transitioned, you're pivoted, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Several times. I mean, from short-term renting to, you know, helping property manage those for other people and corporate people to building your own tiny home,
mm-hmm,
and now creating this software to where it can be duplicated over, mm-hmm, and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we as consumers,
mm-hmm,
because we want to know, how do we get your product? How much does it cost?
Mm-hmm.
Like, can I do it? Like, can my mom, my 50, you know, can my 68-year-old mom buy a product and really actually execute this? How do, mm-hmm, they?
Okay, so the number one thing I do want to clarify is that what we sell is a service. So we do not deliver the product. We are not the builders.
Right.
We connect you with the builders. What the service that we offer is pre-construction planning services. So you can literally just go to our website, gatheradu.com, and that is how you can get started. You can insert your address. It'll allow you to search and give you some initial information in terms of what am I zoned as? Is this possible for me? And it'll allow you to schedule a call with one of our representatives. Once you schedule a call with them, they'll get on the phone and we literally are just answering questions for the most part. Like, if you want to get started with us or not, it doesn't matter, because our overall goal and our mission is to get more of these built, whether it's with us or with somebody else, or you just say, hey, I got a cousin, my cousin Joe can do this anyway, and yeah, I just want some clarification. It's totally up to you.
Awesome.
So primarily we're answering those questions. But if you are saying that, like, okay, no, I really need some guidance, I really want to work with y'all, I've seen a lot of people have seen like my articles or we've seen the YouTube, and that's how we get a lot of traffic as well. If they do say that they want to work with us, then at that point we start our official like contractual engagement. And when we do that, it can range anywhere. I would say our pricing in terms of for those pre-construction planning services, meaning that we are handling everything in terms of your permitting, your plans, drafting it up, designing it, and coordinating everything for you, it can range anywhere from about $5,000 to maybe $7,000 to $8,000, depending on your location.
It's not bad.
And it's not, because you're like, you can go, a lot of people tend to say like, okay, well, don't contractors do the same thing? Well,
as a project manager, they handled everything for you. Mm-hmm. Okay?
And you're essentially getting those documents done too. Like, it's, mm-hmm, not like you have to.
Exactly, because even when you work with a contractor, like, mm-hmm, you'll still have to engage, mm-hmm, an engineer, you'll still have to engage an architect.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, I'm a builder, I build a lot of stuff. I don't think that is bad. And
yes,
for you to actually finish on something that's such a low ticket item to build, that can actually bring you back that same amount in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it is an awesome investment.
And that's the piece.
Go ahead.
Let's talk
about return on investment.
Like, when, if you want to get your ROI, because there are some people who it's like the ROI might not be monetary. It might just be, I have this and now my mom is able to be here and she's helping with my kids, whatever it is. But whether your ROI is monetary or not, and if it is monetary and you say, okay, I want to rent this out, you absolutely can dig a really good hole into whatever you spent within the first year.
You really can.
You and
depending
and if
on your clientele and what your marketing is, you really can.
And that's what I always say. The marketing is the biggest piece to determine how much you are going to be able to attack that ROI.
And your location. I mean, if you're in a killer location that people really want to come to, like, I mean, you got snowbirds that want to come, but they can't even afford it to come in certain places like Arizona. But if you, I'm serious.
Yes.
This is a really cool thing that you've created, and it's going to help a lot of people, just from that person that could be possibly losing their house with the freaking 401k just bucketed up over there, and they can use that, to that person that's really rich and they're like, oh yeah, we want
to just another way to run the play again.
Yeah, just run the play.
Or my husband's in there all the time now.
Exactly. Like how you said. And that's the piece, is like whether you want to use it for other people to rent it out, whether for your family, like, and then on top of that, the piece that we always like to like reiterate to anyone that we get on a call with, it is the way that you use it can change over time.
This is a whole
it
can change. A whole partnership. Meaning that person that's going to buy their first time, this is me, I love to put things together. I'm going to sell you because you deserve to be.
Thank you.
Like, it's something big. I'm serious. Like, I build. Scope of works, spec list, all of these things. It takes a lot of time.
Yes. And anytime somebody get on the phone and they say that, oh, well, I know somebody, I can just, I'm going to just do it myself. It's like, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, references to know a great builder. Okay, yeah, okay. But buying into a lot.
But one problem I think it really solves too, that a lot of people don't take into account, is we're having this huge migration back down to the South.
Yes.
This is a perfect business model that puts the people that are traveling from Chicago, from Philly, from New York, and they don't know, they're ready to buy, but they, you know, some people just want to test out the area first.
Yeah.
You get to provide, you know, an area for somebody to rent while they figuring out, you know, how they want to shake before they buy their next house, or, you know, really plant their seeds in the next, you know, area that they want to live in.
Let's just say that Fresh just came out with a great product, and it can be used on every platform.
Everything.
From a first-time home buyer to an elderly person, to a very luxury rich person, to a person that's on their last.
Yes.
You know, and they just want to save their home. Like, this is a game changer. It's a game changer for a lot of people, even builders like me. I'm just being honest.
And we're super excited. We're super excited to continue to iterate, because right now it's like we are working with homeowners in California and Georgia, as you know.
Yep.
You know, like, this is very, everything that we're doing is very, very place-based.
Mm-hmm.
And it's dependent on what your local regulations say about that. Mm-hmm. And right now, again, with the conversation changing, and like I just read a New York Times article where they were talking about, like, they're now calling the time that we're in now, similar to like the Great Depression. They're calling it the Great Compression. The Great Compression, where it's like, because everything, inflation is so high, prices for homes are so high, people are buying smaller. They are they are literally developers now building tiny house communities, communities of cottages. Like, everyone is going smaller, and whatever side of the fence you play on in terms of whether or not you think that's good or bad, it's up to you. But the truth or the fact of the matter is, it is happening. So now what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And I feel like you found a great space in it, because basically you took yourself out and said, hey, if you want to do it, no matter how you want to do it, use this to get there.
Yes.
Right? To help you to make less mistakes, right? More efficiency.
Less mistakes than me, please.
Right? No, I get it. And I've been there, right? Even learning to build, and you're like, oh man, that contingency is out.
Yes.
That's gone. I'm done. Sheetrock, here we go again. Wasting materials. Whatever, you know. Foundation wasn't even built on a solid foundation. Let's not talk about that.
And you mentioned iterations too, which I love, because it plays into, again, the pivoting, you know, the homeowners kind of changing their perspectives. Like you said, it can always change on how you want to use it with time. But for you, for the company, what iterations are you excited about? Like, things that might be changing because of whatever regulations you're seeing that are happening, or the needs of like the homeowners. What are you excited about that may be changing in the near future for you guys?
So for us, we have from the very beginning also toyed with an idea of having a marketplace just overall for people to use to connect with great builders, great lenders, and great manufacturers who are within this space. Because I mean, we have our list, but it's like if you're able to go on our website, regardless, again, if you work with us or not, and you're able to go and search if this particular builder or this particular contractor or manufacturer is really specialized within this space, and you can see, I don't know, their recent work, their recent reviews, that type of thing, and they're coming from, let's say, a vetted source like us, because I do say that we are vetted, like we are vetting these people through and through to mm-hmm. make sure that they can do what they... Because it's a lot mm-hmm. of people who think they can just because it's a tiny house. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I did it on a big scale. I can do it on a small. And it's like, it's still not the same thing. But that would be the piece that I'm most excited about. It's like a marketplace where homeowners can self-serve and go out and go ahead and just reach out to the people that they need to mm-hmm. go ahead and do. Because we only have so much capacity right. in terms of like the clients that we can take on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. But if you're able to go ahead and we're able to still help you, and maybe that is for a small charge, maybe it's still free, I don't know. But if we're able to do that and then you can go forth and at the very least have the stakeholders that you need who can help you, you're golden. Like, because those people are going to be the ones who can also tell you the steps if you don't end up working with us to do it.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And then going back, so while we're on the topic of iterations mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. pivots, mm-hmm. you mentioned all the different pivots that you've had to make mm-hmm. Before you got to where you are now. Talk about the mental wear or the mental preparations you have to make before making a pivot, like the amount of energy it takes to switch from one thing to the next, because a lot of people can kind of like can close off when it comes to having to make those huge decisions yeah. and these, you know, revert to a whole different direction. Mm-hmm. What advice would you offer to people who are facing that same struggle?
In terms of pivoting, if you're facing a struggle in terms of, okay, do I pivot or how do I even pivot? I feel like a lot of the time our uneasiness, our anxiousness, the stress tends to come from the unknown. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with both decisions, like where you are now and where you're wanting to go, you need to take into account all of the considerations. Like, how is my lifestyle going to change? How is the money going to change? How is how I'm spending my time going to change if I decide to make this pivot? That would be like number one. You just need to consider all of that when it comes to it. And then on top of that, like, I want to say just do it, but I feel like that's...
I like when you said to surrender.
Like,
you,
and that's
the... I have
be,
a
like,
friend right now that's closing up like a packing and shipping store and whatever. And the big thing for him is, God, all my clients are coming in and they don't know I'm shutting the freaking door. And even though he's transitioning, it's hard.
Yeah,
you have that surrender word, like that inner. Remember you said the inner is always bigger than the outer?
Absolutely.
It's that inner thing that controls your
mind. And that's because many times we're looking at, like, if you're looking at a pivot and you're figuring out, okay, well, I don't want to do it because maybe these people will think this, or maybe, like, I'm going to let this person down. Again, all of that is secondary to how you feel on the inside. If you are not good with where you're at, if you feel like, okay, this is a definite pivot that I need, you need to lean into it and you need to do it. And I think it goes back to my point of whenever you are considering some type of like a pivot, and a pivot is a hard decision regardless. So when you're looking at hard decisions, look at how you feel. And I hope this makes sense, right? But when I say look at how you feel, I pay very close attention to the things that I'm doing, the people that I'm around, all of that, and how it makes me feel. Once I leave that space, once I leave your aura, do I feel exhausted? Do I feel like, that was kind of weird? Or even at a job, right? Do I feel like I'm just so drained when I leave? I pay attention to that. And I tend to, I guess, like steer away from things that exhaust me, that drain me, that I'm feel like, okay, I feel a little confused after interacting or whatever it is. And I lean more into things that are bringing me joy, that I'm feeling like, okay, in this season, yes, this is what I want to do. And I've weighed all of the factors and this is what makes sense. That's what makes the pivot way easier for me. It's like, if it's not bringing me joy, I'm just creating a prison within myself.
Yeah, I like that one.
Speaking of prisons. Because I want to talk about that, because you also mentioned how you were first gen and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And being first gen can be tough. You know, not having the support that you really need, like as opposed to someone who is second, third gen into a certain space. Yeah. Like they got all the support they need.
Yeah.
What generational bondages did you feel like you had to break that were like really weighing on you throughout this whole journey?
Oh my, yeah, no, that is a fantastic question. What generational bondages do I feel like I had to break? I think I already mentioned the first one, which is with money.
The money, yeah.
The money was huge. That was like the main one that was glaring right in my face at all times. Because again, it's like, it was always just I gotta find the discounts for everything, or I gotta make sure that it's like, I'm not spending too much so that, like, you're saving for something.
Was it also hard investing in yourself at times too? Like spending a ticket on like a mentorship or something like that?
So absolutely, 100%. And I remember the first time that I did spend more than five figures on like a coach or a mentor.
Wow.
Oh my God. Because I ran it past my parents. They weren't for
the
it
questions,
at all.
I'm sure you got.
They're like, well, why would you ever want to? And it's just like, and when I tell you, that was one of the best investments I made of my life. I completed that program, I think, like 2020, 2021, and that's literally what skyrocketed my income and everything. And I remember after talking with them, I'm like, I was kind of questioning myself. I'm like, damn, maybe I shouldn't do it. But in my head, because I had already gone to college, I'm like, okay, well, I got some experience from there, and that was just like $40,000.
So you spent more than that.
So it's like, I might as well do this. And, you know, and she's showing me the results. College barely showing me the results. Like, yeah. You know? So that was just like, that was a piece. And where are we going?
No, the bondages, right?
Yes,
so
yes,
the money
yes.
was
okay.
one.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any others, we'd love to hear those.
Yeah, so the money was a main one. And then... the generational bondages.
Almost, you asked your parents, almost like validation.
Yeah, and that I would 100% say that was a big one as well. It's like the validations, because I feel like recently I've come to a point or a realization
from
that,
mom and dad. I'm not talking about from
exactly, but the wanting the validation from them of like, am I on the right track?
Right.
And
to go get more
exactly
than you ever had. Yeah.
And I realized, and I had a mentor actually. A mentor is who told me this, who said this to me when I was like. Talking to him, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm so stressed about all of this. And he's like, you know, you have to understand that oftentimes your parents can only, like, they gave you everything that they had, but they can only bring you to the point where they brought themselves by the time that they had you. That is what, and that for me, and whether or not it resonates or it like holds true for you is up to you. But for me, it was huge because my parents had, I'm the oldest of five. My parents had me when they were kids. I grew up with my parents. And that was a piece that I would say, even when you're talking about generational bondages as well, because my grandmother also had my mother at a very young age too. And it got to a point where probably like once I hit 21, where I'm trying to figure out like, you have a need to, like your inner child has a new need to be parented, but you don't know who necessarily to go to for that. And you initially try to go to, let's say, like, your parents, but you get to a point where it's, like, it's no longer your parents' job to parent that inner child for you. You're, like, you have to do it yourself.
You got to put her in a cage.
Exactly.
I know. But it's that funny thing when you grow through life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody touches here. We're just not talking about it. Mm-hmm. I love this conversation.
And what does that look like, too? Like, parenting your inner child.
Man, it's different.
You
it
doing
depends
it.
On... I'm going to be honest with you because... I'm going to be honest. And you just tell me what you guys think.
Yeah.
Parenting that inner child. It depends on that parent and where they met themselves and how they parented you. You will individually have to meet yourself and know like, oh my God, this is that inner child. You'll probably either keep coming to it.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you see 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds that keep coming to it, or your parent that never got through it. And so you'll start to identify it for yourself. I think that inner.
Exactly.
That
like
inner
in
child.
In,
that limits you.
It exactly.
Limits
and you'll find that it's limiting you. It's limiting your growth. It's limiting your, like, your relationships. And that's a piece that I realized as well. Like, it was my relationships that really held a mirror up. How I was maneuvering my relationships and managing those that held a mirror up to, like, I have some inner healing that I need to do that I have not done.
Okay. So kind of like in moments of regression, like men and women, when we face, like, that fight or flight type of mode, we regress to our inner child. You know, so it could be
that
in like
place.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly. Like how you react, how your initial reaction is, like that's gonna tell you whether or not your inner child needs some healing or not.
Man, that's it.
That's gonna tell
I like
you.
It.
Wow.
And it's all about how like in the moment that you realize that everything is, the only thing that you can control is your reaction to things.
And then what's going to actually get you still enough to control that inner child and not go to that other person that might actually make you go back to that inner child and not be able to parent that?
And I love that you mentioned controlling your reactions, because that's even related to when you transition from your job. You know, that didn't seem like a reaction. That seemed like a plan. And some people, once
it was
they,
almost like a war on her life. It was like a boundary of like, I'm not letting you take me back there.
But still, even sometimes when people face that, they could react and just go ahead and just quit that job, you know, and just leave without having those that plan B, or in your case, having the units and having some income coming in that prepared you to be able to make that transition. I guess what I want to get you to elaborate on is where you're like, how did you go about it? Like when you first identified that this was draining and that this was not no longer the life that I wanted, how did you go about making those steps towards preparing your exit?
I would say I was quite literally planning my exit for probably like 2 years. It just, it accelerated right before it happened. And it accelerated due to that burnout that I mentioned to y'all. But how I prepared, number one, like making sure that like my relationships are good. When I leave, my entire goal was I do not want to burn any bridges, because again, if I need to come back, like that was, and that was kind of the rationalization within my head when we're talking about pivots as well, to your earlier point of like, how do you more effectively do that? It's like, well, I could always go back. No decision is permanent, right? Like I still hold my degrees. I still have my experience. I still have these relationships. I can always go back to a job, but it's not all the time that I can always bet on myself 100% like this. I don't have no kids. I'm not married. I'm not tied to anything. Like it's good. I'm good. And then from that point of, I guess, pivoting, your other piece was, what was the most recent one? The most recent question.
Of the pivoting?
No, or no, just not the pivoting.
Yeah, preparing for the exit.
Exactly. So when I started to experience that burnout, I'm going to be honest with you, I ended up taking a couple of weeks off of work because the burnout was so heavy. Like, I really just needed to, like, clear my head. And once I did that, that's when I figured out a game plan. And for me, my game plan was, since I was already overstressed, and my job was seeing this. They were like, they knew that I was building this tiny house. They knew that I had all of this stuff going on. I never really hid any of that from them. And they accepted that. But the way that I was able to plan for it, number one, was making sure that I have that, like, I had stocks and I had savings and all of that to fall back on. And that, I mean, it speaks to that good corporate job. So I will acknowledge that privilege as well. It's like, I had stocks that I was always willing to cash out, or if I needed money, I was able to cash those out. But then in addition to that, I ended up taking FMLA. Because again, and I don't...
Well, you were stressed.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I was stressed. And that's the piece that I want to be clear, is like, I was planning the exit in terms of, okay, I know I need to do this at some point. I need to set my ducks up in a row. But by the time that it got to the point where I made the decision, it was accelerated to the point where I honestly don't feel like I was in the driver's seat of it. It was like, it was something that I needed to do. I was already stressed from work. I had took the weeks off. And then, like, I think one of my managers had mentioned FMLA. They're like, you know, if you need it, because I had to go to a psychiatrist. That is how stressed I was. Like, I ended up being diagnosed with anxiety, PTSD. And it was an insane, insane period of time, because again, there was so much going well, like on the outside. Nobody knew. But
you're still only one human.
but that is how I did it. And I think once I was able to do that, because FMLA then gave me like paid time for a week to where I exhausted my PTO, and then I used the time that FMLA gave me. And at that point, it was a smooth transition. I'll be honest. Like, I don't have any other advice outside of that. It was just a smooth transition from, because I was already off work and I was already taking that time to rest my brain, that it was like, okay, well, this is the best decision that I need to do.
And you mentioned too, the weeks before the FMLA, you took that time to plan. So it sounds like the planning is what gave you the freedom to have that smooth transition as well.
Yeah. Like, I didn't just, like, get mad, upset, because I remember there was a point where it's like something happened at my job, so right. I'm like, y'all know I have all of this external stuff going on, and you on this call saying happy Monday, like asking, it just felt very, but I remember there was an experience that did happen where I could have reacted, like my inner child could have reacted and been like, F this, I quit this job, like they don't understand, none of that, but I took time for myself. Having mentors, I would say as well, helped mm-hmm. greatly, mm-hmm. Help having mentors in that space that kind of pulse checked me on, okay, are you sure you're ready to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And even when it's like, speaking to your point earlier around validation, because this is something else that I had brought to my parents, and I'm like, what you think I should do? Should I quit the job? Similar to the point of like, should
Sound
I spend
like
this
you
money?
Have a good support system. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I'm seeking that validation, but what I found, I would say in the last couple of years, that anytime I am asking a question, again, seeking validation is like inside, I already know what I need to do. I'm just looking for somebody to say, because regardless of what they say, I'm going to do what I want anyway.
I understand.
But it's like, I'm looking for somebody to validate, like, okay, yeah, you think I should do it too? Okay, cool, I'm on the right track. And then that's it. When really it's like, if you just start to, a big piece of what kicked off during that time period of burnout as well, was I got back into like consistently journaling. And that is when I realized, I'm like, I have the answers inside
of
me already in terms of what I want to do, who I want to be, where I want to go, and whether or not I need to make these decisions. And I'm not going to say stop altogether, but it's like I had to slow down on having these conversations with everybody else who is like, you're not even in this space. You don't know how it feels.
They not you.
You're just not.
Yeah, they not you.
And when I realized that, I'm like, I am the only one who is going to know whether or not this feels right to me. And once I started trusting that, I mean, it all went up again, surrender.
Yeah.
I do have one question. Let's go back. We don't always want to go back. But mm-hmm. there are a lot of people. So, for example, even myself, like that short-term rental game. Like for me, I'm like, mm-hmm. I tried it. It was great. That wasn't like, that's not where I am. I love developing. I love buying and holding.
Yeah.
Multiple units.
Mm-hmm.
And developing. But short-term rental was great. It was cute and dirty.
It was cute.
What would you say to that person that's still there and how to pivot or transition out of there the most seamless? Look at her eyes. My God.
They want to? Do they want to? Is the question.
Yes, they
want to
get out.
Okay. They want to get out of short-term rentals and they're trying to figure out how to pivot.
Yeah, what's the best way to do it? If they own the asset, they're mm-hmm. not, you know.
I love that you asked this question because I feel like I don't get to talk about it as much mm-hmm. when I transitioned out of short-term rentals. So I went from short-term rentals to midterm rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did midterm rentals, mm-hmm. I actually started renting the house out rather than on the short-term rental uh-huh. platform. I rented it like the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I started renting it out suite by suite.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if this is a 3-bedroom house, I got 3 suites.
That's smart.
You get uh-huh. suite yeah. number one, uh-huh. you get suite number two, put some locks on the doors.
Uh-huh.
And that, and I kid you not, It padded it enough because it's one thing to go from short-term rental to long-term rental. That's a large
leap. Yeah, it's a different thing.
But if you leap from like, okay, let's say short-term rental to renting out suite by suite on a midterm basis, you are
like
still...
Like 3 to 6 months?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Like 3 to 6 months, something like that. When you do that, it's not as heavy as a hit to
it's
your
not.
Income. Because that's the major piece that when, like, that's what keeps people, like, in a chokehold with short-term rentals. It's like, well, the money is so good. But, again, I would also urge you to ask yourself, at what cost?
At what cost?
At what cost?
Because if you, every time it's time to check out, it's like yep. you scrambling across units trying to clean this and yep. put sheets on the bed and
that's
all of that.
Time.
Your cleaners aren't yep. reliable. Cool. Again,
damage.
At what cost?
Yep.
And
time is the biggest asset you have in this life.
Mm-hmm.
And I always love to buy my time.
Yeah.
You, let's just go back to this whole building tech amazing
mm-hmm.
piece that you've created. You are helping so many people with the business of time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think that just wanted to bring that back out of short-term rentals because I think that the midterm rental thing is a really smart thing.
It's an amazing play. Midterm rentals, and then even if you do still, like, some people still do short-term rentals, and they still do, like, a suite by suite or a room by room. You can do that, but figure out what, like, massage it for what works for you. I feel like there was a point in time where so many people were jumping into short-term rentals, and everybody's now teaching Airbnb and how do you get started that everybody was looking at one linear way to do it, but you can run the play however you want to run the play, yeah. what works for you. And I found that what worked for me, like renting out room by room, that is something I will likely continue doing, like further into my real estate journey.
Question for you. So, you know, you said rent it room by room. Well, mm-hmm. like even for me, like I've done it where it's like, hey, you know, just that medical field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't find that to be too lucrative. Mm-hmm. Reason being is because I'm in the healthcare field myself. Mm-hmm. We don't like it. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be with other people.
Yeah.
Unless it's super cheap.
Mm-hmm. Because I tried out. So I tried out marketing on Furnish Finder. And it was, I didn't really like it. So my sweet spot is students.
Love it.
Undergraduate yep. or graduate students. I prefer graduate students personally or upperclassmen, but that is my sweet spot, especially when you think about the city of Atlanta.
It's true. That's where I started.
It's a concentration of so many colleges and universities. Yeah. And again, like these colleges and universities, especially when we're looking at, let's say, like the AUC, many times being on campus or even near campus, it might not be the best neighborhood or it might not be the best lodging options. So if you're providing a suite that is like, this is in a house, you got autonomy. They'll go for it.
You know their check is going to come.
Exactly. Their refund check.
When I first got into real estate, I was right through my mail's concert. Got it. Love it.
Yes.
And they want to pay their stuff. Like, they want to finish college.
And my students, like, the students that I've had, especially since going room to room, I only do students now. And I never have an issue. I always get my money. Yeah.
They're willing. Mm-hmm. They're willing to be with the. They know their situation. They know that they have to have a roommate.
Exactly.
and they have it good. It's better than being in a dorm.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know
exactly.
You know, shared shower and all that stuff. Right. You can't have a hot pot. I mean, what?
I'm
my little sister's at UTK right now.
Yeah.
So I'm just like,
But before we transition and you know get you out of here, Precious, I do want to touch on something that you shared towards the end.
Okay.
That is not talked about and super relevant to our community, which was the PTSD that you've experienced at that job.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this conversation a few weeks back where, you know, he happened to be an Army vet, but we were talking about how he had his PTSD back when he was a child in Detroit, you know, prior to even getting into the Army.
Yeah.
I mean, most people associate it with being in the military and serving and don't expect that regular people can suffer from PTSD, especially as a Black woman. Where do you feel like that experience of, where do you feel like the PTSD came from? How did you identify it? How did you heal from it? What did that process look like for so many other women that, you know, could be experiencing the same thing?
Oh my goodness, that is a loaded question.
I know.
Yeah, it is.
You almost made another episode.
Yeah,
Precious,
no, that's
coming
loaded.
Back.
That's
because
loaded.
This is like, you almost need a panel of women for this.
Yeah.
No,
right.
Absolutely.
I mean, like,
absolutely.
You know,
because it's going to look different for everyone. So when I started to work with a psychiatrist and I got diagnosed with PTSD, number one, my most recent experience that triggered that was I was in a relationship or situationship, I don't know, and it just went downhill very quickly, like emotionally abusive, physically abusive, and it's so crazy because many, like when everything happened, it's just like, number one, I'm asking myself, I'm like, how the hell did I find myself in this situation? And then even the people around is like, wait, how? And they are like, because I don't talk about it often, right? But anytime I do, many people with the way that, like, they look at successful women or just even women, again, like myself, and it's like, you, how do I say? ¿Cómo se dice? We tend to sometimes think that we're exempt from life's hardships.
Oh yeah, I know.
And that is not the case. So I would say that number one was like that most recent one. And then growing up, oh my goodness. So that stemmed from number one, losing so many people. And I feel like if you speak to more folks, specifically from Chicago as well, because thankfully my parents got our family out like before I started high school. But when I think about my close friends, my family who stayed there and went through high school and maybe they still live there, you get so used to going to funerals,
yes,
visiting people in prison, yeah. Like, just losing people in the blink of an eye
it's
like that.
It's true. That's how it was for me. I get it.
And that was a piece when I started to work with the psychiatrist as well, that was, like, a trigger. Like, it wasn't until I started to talk to other people that I didn't realize that it's like, oh, you've, like, only ever attended maybe one to two funerals in your life? And it was just so many, like, the PTSD came from the heavy emotions that I didn't necessarily get to express or get to really feel through the depths of it when I was a child. My parents, love them to death, but it's like, again, we grew up together. So the same way that I was learning to manage my emotions and how do I communicate this and how do I really effectively, like, handle, again, just big emotions, so were they.
Right.
And I'll be honest, I didn't even start to give them grace until I maybe hit like 22 or 23 when I realized and something like clicked for me that it's like, this is not just my mom. My mom is a daughter. She's somebody's friend. She's navigating all of these different pieces of life as well. And many times when we're looking at our parents too, we just look at them in the role of mom or dad. And it's like, well, you're supposed to do this. When it's like, this is their first time doing life too. So that was like a huge piece of grace.
Wow, I think a lot of people need to hear that. Mm-hmm.
It was just a huge piece of just extending grace. And that was... those were the two. I would say I would identify those as the two. And when I started to work through it, number one, actually allowing myself to feel my emotions was a huge piece. Because for so long, and I told y'all, like, when people would describe me, it would be like a beast, right? Like, you work through it. And my friends know that anytime, like, if you see me going hard, something that happened, and I'm like...
You working through it.
I'm trying to work through it and not feel it.
Yeah.
And... even in that instance, like, again, after that period of burnout, I allowed myself to, like, no, I just need to give it time. Like, I need to cry through it. I need to listen to my songs. I need to meditate. Like, I started going outside. I try to just get outside, period, and just take a walk every single day. Now, that's why I got a dog, too, because she gets me outside. Mm-hmm. She was kind of a stem from all of that stuff with the psychiatrist. But either way. She's my support animal.
I love it.
And she just as clingy, just as anxious.
A dog is way better than a kiddo. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. But yeah, so like actually getting outside, allowing myself to feel, like really feel those emotions, and then journaling. Journaling has been the biggest piece. And then on top of that, I mentioned this, I feel like I'm starting to mention this on every podcast that I do, but I was reading, there were two books that changed the game for me. Number one is The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And then the other is A Guide to the Good Life. And it's basically like, I can't remember the author's name, but it goes into the practice of stoicism.
Mm-hmm.
And amazing, those were the two that really allowed me to like, okay, let's pull it back. Let me bring myself into the now. Because again, when you're like somebody who I'm attacking this goal, I'm doing this, you're constantly living in the future. But your body's right now. Your mind is here right now. And that's the piece. And then journaling as a daily practice allows me to bring myself into the present moment and really feel my emotions. Like, that's a prompt that I do. It's like, right now in this moment, how do I feel? And actually getting real specific with it. And another piece, if we're talking tools to kind of manage this in your mindset, I would say, like, if you've never heard of or looked up the emotion wheel, look up the emotion wheel. Like, just Google it, because it allows you to get more specific in terms of, again, how do I feel? If somebody asks you on a day-to-day basis, we're like, oh, how are you? Good. I'm fine.
That's the standard.
That's the standard answer,
yeah.
But when you are able to more clearly articulate exactly how you feel, you can better react to, again, because all we can control it.
You said it's an emotion wheel?
The emotion wheel.
I think that every parent needs to get an emotion wheel.
Yeah.
By the time that your kid is 2 years old.
100%.
And I think it's so important to incorporate into house. I have a 2-year-old right now. I feel like I literally can connect with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm love that this topic was brought up. Mm-hmm. I think we need to have a... I'm serious. A lot of times, Kai knows, like, he knows I'm like, we're having one of those. So you're coming back to have one of these.
I would love
we
to.
Are. We really to. Have to, because this is what is saving lives.
Yes, exactly.
On our podcast, this is it. Tapping into that inner self of people. You can be this great entrepreneur. You could be all this stuff. But the mind and our business model is this is it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's because how do you transition? How do you pivot through life? How do you come from these crazy moments of like being enchained as a child, having all these triggers throughout life, these different seasons, and manage them? The emotional wheel is coming into people's houses 2024.
When you look it up, like once this releases, please in the comments let me know whether or not you heard about it. Absolutely. I'll send y'all the link.
Perfect.
I'm
putting it in there.
when I tell you, it totally changed the way that I maneuver and I, again, like, react. If all we have is our reactions, if mm-hmm. all we can control is our reactions, when you know how you really feel, maybe you're not mad or upset, maybe you're just disappointed.
Yeah.
It then changes how you are then going to react to that emotion. So when you're able to get more specific with it, it just, like, it totally changes the game. And again, if you are not journaling, journal.
Yeah.
Talk to yourself and talk to your higher power. Get tapped in and know that it's literally, like, it's already inside of you.
It's definitely inside. And that's why I like how higher power, but I've been starting to consider it like the inner power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause like, that's where you gotta start every time.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to bring this up too, Precious, because I feel like a lot of times when we have all these entrepreneurs, coaches and consultants mm-hmm. on the show, people just think that they've always were successful, or they just had this different thing that made them successful, but they forget the biggest thing is that we are people.
Yeah.
You know, and in your story, somebody's gonna read that, hear it, watch it, listen to it, mm-hmm. and be like, damn, she going through all that, I went through all that, you know, I could do it too. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest reason and why we had these conversations. Before we pivot, to our listeners, like, anything special you have going on, a piece of advice that you really want to, you know, leave them with, where they can find you.
Of course. Okay, so a piece of advice that, I mean, you're listening to this podcast, of course, because you likely want to be successful. You want to likely make some money and get to a point of that you always have envisioned in your mind. And what I always love to remind people is that you can sit for hours listening to this content, listening to people talk about the tips, the tools, the tactics, the techniques. But if you're not good on the inside, if you don't have your mind right, once you implement all of those tools, tactics, and techniques, and then encounter the roadblocks that these same people, what you just said, have encountered and you might not have seen, then all of those tips, tools, and tactics will mean nothing. Mm-hmm. Tackle the inner first, and everything else will fall into place. That's my biggest piece of advice. Like, it'll more quickly, more seamlessly fall into place. Because lean into ease.
Choose the soft life.
No, I wouldn't even look. That's a whole nother episode too. Right.
But I agree. I mean, lean into ease.
Yeah.
Choose the soft life, not just for women, but for men too. Yes. Surrendering is a universal thing.
Yes.
Ms. Precious brought that word, and I just want to just leave it there.
That's where we drop it.
And whatever, I'm serious, mm-hmm. surrendering in whatever problem you have right mm-hmm. now. A lot of times you will get to that next step.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
When you just surrender. When you just let it, just let it be, let it go.
You are control what you
can. Control what you can control. Control what you can control, and don't focus on the things that you cannot control. And that would be my greatest piece of advice. You can find me if you want to have a conversation everywhere. Precious Price, just Google Precious Price. I think all of my profiles will pop up. On many social platforms, I am either Precious Price or Precious C Price. But either way, search it, and I promise you'll be able to find me.
Mm-hmm. She's Googleable. You can find her.
Yes, go ahead and tell our guest again. What's this great company that you've great service that you've put out?
Absolutely. GatherADU. GatherADU.com is where you can access information in terms of getting started with your own backyard accessory dwelling unit build. Or if you just want to learn more information and figure out, is this as good as people say it is? It is.
Come find it. For sure. We'll make sure we have that resource in the description as well, in the bio of this video. Jazz, how you feel about today's conversation?
I feel like today's conversation was awesome. It was a great balance of real estate, but also just that whole inner piece of allowing yourself to know who you are, when to move on,
yes,
when to hold on.
Right? I'm sending this one to the fam.
Right, and even how to do that.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah,
like I love that. There was a bigger piece here than just that, but I like the fact that we could give to the world today. I mean, seriously, in my aspect, you know, my perspective, mm-hmm. I'm really big on what Ms. Precious is big on. So
yeah,
my cup is full. Thank y'all so much.
Absolutely, my cup is full as well. Like I said, you provided so much value, Precious. I appreciate you joining us on a Sunday.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying. You know, spending your time with us and You know, I just want to appreciate you, and I always want to appreciate our guests tuning in every single Monday, you know, tapping in with us, leaving those comments, sharing the videos to our millionaires that are watching this, and you feel like you got so much value. What I want y'all to do is hit that share button and send it to your family and friends that you feel like will also get value from this as well. Those homeowners, those future homeowners, getting ready to be homeowners this year, you know,
that's
whoever.
A strategy. Straight into equity. You already got a build. You already got the process of building too. You can literally pitch it to the lender. Let's go.
Exactly.
Let's get some more homeowners. Come on. Let's go.
Chop, chop, chop.
Call Precious. Let's go. We'll help you out.
And let's talk. Let's do it.
Can put it together.
Don't just look at the duplexes. I'm telling y'all.
Nah.
And they're hard to find nowadays anyway. So.
Exactly. You know you wanted that house. You know you got three kids. You don't want that next door neighbor. I've been there already. Trust me. I can tell you about it. Just hit us up. Precious house too. You wanted her way.
And it's so funny about the timing. Like, me and my brother-in-law was already, like, we the ones in the family that really want to see the family do well. And we've been talking about, like, let's get some land. Let's, you know, set this up, set that up. It's like, okay, let's get some land, get a big house, and then get some ADUs that we could put on there. You know, so we definitely going to be in contact. So, Precious, again, I appreciate you joining us. I'm your guy, Kai Speaks. You just heard from Heavy House Jazz. Make sure y'all like, comment, and subscribe if you haven't already. See y'all next week.
Thank you.